This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Idsty, sitting in for Neil Conan here in Washington. When the Supreme Court agreed yesterday to review the constitutionality of the phrase "under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance, the justices took a first step into the muddy waters of religious freedom, patriotism, and American traditions. The plaintiff in the case, Michael Newdow, sued his daughter's school district, arguing that phrase violates her religious freedom. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with him, and next year the case will go before the Supreme Court. What questions do you have about this case? Call us at 800-989-8255 or email us at totn@npr.org. With us now to get into the details of the case is Sheldon Namod, a law professor at Chicago Kent College of Law, and he joins us from his office at the college. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Good to be here.
First of all, we should be clear that the court hasn't actually decided whether or not Newdow, the plaintiff in the case, is allowed to bring this case. Explain that for us.
You're right. That's a technical issue. Let me put it this way. Federal courts, including the Supreme Court, have to have what's called Article III jurisdiction. They have to have the power to hear the case. One of the requirements is that litigant, the one bringing the lawsuit in particular, has to have what's called standing, has to have a personal stake in the case. And there is a background question here as to whether the plaintiff, who is in a sense representing his daughter, the school child, has standing to bring this Establishment Clause issue. He's also arguing that he has standing in his own right as a parent, but that's a little muddy because I understand that he and his ex-wife are divorced and that he does not have custody of the child.
Mm-hmm.
So the Supreme Court can decide on its own. The parties don't even have to raise the issue for a court, for a federal court to do this. The court could decide not to take the case.
Any...
I doubt that that's going to happen, by the way, because you've got a conflict between the Seventh Circuit, which came out one way, and this Ninth Circuit Newdow case. But it could happen.
Mm-hmm. So you think it's likely that the court will hear this case?
Likely.
Mm-hmm. The other hitch came yesterday when Justice Antonin Scalia recused himself from the case. Tell us why.
He recused himself because he has made very clear publicly his views of the Ninth Circuit's decision in Newdow. And he made those views clear in a non-judicial setting. He was giving a speech, as I understand it. And since he declared himself in advance, it was entirely appropriate for him to avoid the appearance of impropriety and recuse himself. Now, since the court granted cert, that means that at least four justices had some questions about this, independent of Justice Scalia, so that this case is going to be decided one way or the other, even apart from Justice Scalia's involvement. Could lead to a 4-4 split, which, if that's the result, there will probably not be an opinion. In fact, there wouldn't be an opinion for the court. The result would be affirming the decision of the Ninth Circuit and essentially maintaining the status quo nationally.
Mm-hmm. We'd like to ask our listeners to get involved. Give us a call. Tell us about your experience with the Pledge of Allegiance in school. Did you say it in your school? Do your children say it now? How do you feel about it? Give us a call at 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK, or email us at totn@npr.org. Now, if Justice Scalia hadn't recused himself, could that have colored the decision?
Well, every justice has just one vote, but every justice has the opportunity to influence other justices. So that might have made a difference. So we will not really know until the result comes out. If, apart from Justice Scalia, there are five justices who write an opinion for the court, on one side or the other, Justice Scalia's recusal will not make any real difference.
Mm-hmm. As you said a moment ago, this opens the possibility for a split decision on this case. Tell us whether that's happened in the past, and tell us what the implications are if you get a split decision and you still have this decision from the Ninth Circuit.
If it has, it has in fact happened in the past, And the result is, as I indicated earlier, as a technical matter, there is no opinion for the court as a whole. The opinion of the Ninth Circuit is, in fact, affirmed, at least for the time being, which means that it has only limited application to the states that are covered by the Ninth Circuit, for the most part, the Northwest, including California. The other circuits which have not addressed the issue, basically the status quo is maintained nationally until something were to come up in the future.
Mm-hmm. So you could actually have children in the nine states in the Ninth Circuit barred from saying "Under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance, while the rest of the students in the rest of the country said it.
That is correct. You make a point that's worth remembering, that the issue here is not the constitutionality under the Establishment Clause of the pledge generally. It's the constitutionality of the pledge with respect to public school students and specifically with respect to the words "under God." There is no argument made by anybody, seriously, that I know of, who argues that the Pledge of Allegiance, even without the words "under God," are unconstitutional, that school districts cannot require or say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to a caller, Janet, in San Antonio, Texas. Hello, Janet. You're on the air.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Do you have a question?
I'm so happy you're discussing this. I was at a DAR meeting this week, and they discussed how blasphemous the New Doubt case was. So mm-hmm. I reminded them that what is the tradition? I mean, until 1954, we had no "under God." And we won World War II, World War I, and Civil War, and whatever, I don't know mm-hmm. all. And so I'm not sure what the tradition is.
Can I talk a little bit about
yes,
that?
Yes, please do, Professor Nimrod.
Yeah, the Pledge of Allegiance first came into national prominence as a voluntary matter at the end of the 19th century and in the early part of the 20th. It was only in 1942, as I recall it, that the Pledge of Allegiance was codified by the United States Congress without the words "under God," as you know. And it was only in 1954 that the words "under God" were added by Congress specifically for the purpose, this is clear from the legislative history, of responding, if you will, to godless communism. You remember the evil former Soviet Union.
Right.
And this was a response to godless communism. So the clear purpose of the words "under God" at the time was to inject a kind of religious element into the Pledge of Allegiance and to connect nationalism and patriotism and the United States to a kind of view that God is our protector.
Mm-hmm. Janet, are you still with us?
But my dad has passed on, but that generation, somebody once said, "I don't believe in God." He said, "It's not possible, and God doesn't care. He believes in you."
Mm-hmm. But let me ask you.
I think, under God, it's great, I guess, but it's not necessary.
But you were arguing this. You were arguing this at your DAR meeting. Did you make any headway with your argument there?
They looked pretty blank.
They did, huh?
But I'm sure they were. Everybody has their own opinion. They were probably thinking about it.
Professor Nimrod, you were going to say something.
Yeah. Excuse me, John. May I make a very important point about the question?
Please.
Sure.
And that is. Keep in mind that the issue is not whether students can be required to recite the pledge. The Supreme Court held 60 years ago that no students can be required to recite the Pledge of Allegiance because they have free speech rights. The issue is whether the schools can have the pledge anyway.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your call, Janet.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Professor Nimrod, let's move on to some of the arguments in the case itself. As I understand it, Solicitor General Theodore Olson's defense of the term "under God" is based on something called ceremonial deism.
Right.
What is that?
Well, ceremonial deism is a term that seems to have been coined by Walter Rostow about 40 years ago, former Yale Law School dean. He was talking about those kinds of public activities which he characterized as conventional and uncontroversial, even though they had religious elements. And really, that was elaborated on by some of the justices in some later cases. Justice Brennan, here's what he said. It's a form, it's a kind of ceremony, even though it refers to God, has lost through rote repetition any significant religious content. In other words, even though it might have once had religious content, it no longer has it. And there are various examples besides the pledge of this possibility, this category. The Supreme Court starts off with God save this honorable court. We sing very often God bless America. It's that sort of thing. The argument is that it's no longer religious in nature. It is ceremonial deism, and deism refers to a deity who doesn't really have a role in history. It's very different from a theistic belief, which Christianity, Judaism, and Islam are, in God's intervention in history. That's the idea, really, of ceremonial deism. In God We Trust will be another example on the coins.
Let's go to Marjorie in Avon, New York. Hello, Marjorie. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
You have a question or comment?
Well, my comment is, I grew up saying the Pledge of Allegiance in the classroom. I come from a military family. I also served in the military for 8 years, and we also said it often in the military and at baseball games and public events. And I just wonder, well, why do people hate God in such a way that they wouldn't want to say the Pledge of Allegiance? And I also would like to add, if I'm still on the air.
You are?
You are.
I would like to add that I hope the public will be totally outraged to the point that they'll want to say we no longer can tolerate this judicial idea of not saying the Pledge of Allegiance, and that they would set public funding and say we don't want the federal government's funding any longer. We don't want this interference out of our communities. And it would take a big stance. It would take a lot of work, but I pray that the American people would take a stand on this.
You're saying that the schools, if they rejected federal funding, could say whatever they wanted in the Pledge of Allegiance?
That would be the determination of the communities at which the schools thrive in, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, they'd be rejecting the very thing that they were supposed to be pledging allegiance to, right? The United States of America.
Not necessarily, because aren't we the citizens of the United States of America? It's not the government. They're supposed to be representing us.
Mm-hmm. Professor Namad, any comment?
I have a couple of comments. One is that the very interesting question demonstrates how charged this entire issue is. One can view this as violative of the Establishment Clause without being against God. But people on both sides of this issue have raised the stakes symbolically. Secondly, and this is very important to remember, we do have an Establishment Clause in the United States Constitution. The Establishment Clause is designed to be a check on the kinds of things that government can do. A school board, a school district, states, the federal government, these are all entities of government that are covered by the Establishment Clause. So it's not, it's a question of how we interpret the Establishment Clause. Is not a question of whether we have an Establishment Clause that governs the situation at all.
Mm-hmm. Back to this ceremonial deism, was it considered in the lower courts, this issue of ceremonial deism?
Yes, yes, it was. The original decision was a 2-1 decision with one justice in dissent, basically refusing to use the term ceremonial deism, although he mentioned it. He said he's not going to use the term ceremonial deism because it's a euphemism. It suggests that this, the words under God and the pledge have no religious significance whatever. He didn't want to desacralize the words under God to that extent. He basically said that this is what lawyers would call de minimis. This, it does not, the words under God do not raise a serious religious freedom issue or a serious Establishment Clause issue, and it's therefore something that should be tolerated.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind that when you call something ceremonial deism in a very real sense, since you're saying that it has lost whatever religious significance it had previously, you're in a sense sacralizing it. Mm-hmm. You, if it was once sacred, it is no longer sacred. And some religious people may find that very offensive indeed. To say the words under God don't really have much religious significance.
Thank you for joining us on Talk of the Nation today. Sheldon Namod is a professor of law at Chicago Kent College of Law in Chicago, Illinois. He joined us from his office at the college. In Washington, John Itzty, NPR News.